After the departure of the great Saint Narada, Kamsa thought that all the members of the Yadu dynasty were demigods, and that any of the children born from the womb of Devaki might be Vishnu. Fearing his death, Kamsa arrested Vasudeva and Devaki and chained them with iron shackles, suspecting each of the children to be Vishnu. Kamsa killed them one after another because of the prophecy that Vishnu would kill him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Srila Jiva Goswami, in his notes on this verse, has mentioned how Narada Muni gave Kamsa this information. This incident is described in the Haribamsa. Narada Muni went to see Kamsa by providence, and Kamsa received him very well. Narada therefore informed him that any one of the sons of Devaki might be Vishnu, because Vishnu was to kill him. Kamsa should not spare any of Devaki's children. Narada Muni advised. Narada's intention was that Kamsa, by killing the children, would increase the sinful activities so that Krishna would soon appear to kill him. Upon receiving the instructions of Narada Muni, Kamsa killed all the children of Devaki, one after another. The word Ajana Sankaya indicates that Lord Vishnu never takes birth, Ajana, and that he therefore appeared as Krishna, taking birth just like a human being, Manusim Tanumashritam. Kamsa attempted to kill all the babies born of Devaki and Vasudev, although he knew that if Vishnu were born, he would not be killed. Actually, it came to pass that when Vishnu appeared as Krishna, Kamsa could not kill him. Rather, as foretold, it was he who killed Kamsa. One should know in truth how Krishna, who takes his birth transcendentally, acts to kill the demons, but is never killed. When one perfectly understands Krishna in this way, through the medium of Shastra, one becomes immortal. As the Lord says in Bhagavad Gita, 4th chapter, text 9, Janma karma cha me divyam evam yo veti tatvataha tyaktva deham punara janma naiti mam eti sorajuna. One who knows the transcendental nature of my appearance and activities does not, upon leaving the body, take his birth again in this material world, but attains my eternal abode, O Arjuna. After the departure of the great Saint Narada, Kamsa thought that all the members of the Yadu dynasty were demigods, and that any of the children born from the womb of Devaki might be Vishnu. Fearing his death, Kamsa arrested Vasudeva and Devaki and chained them with iron shackles, suspecting each of the children to be Vishnu. Kamsa killed them one after another because of the prophecy that Vishnu would kill him. Today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10. Chapter 1, entitled The Advent of Lord Krishna, Introduction, Text 65 and 66. The inconceivable mercy of Narada Muni is here clearly exhibited. Inconceivable because Krishna is achintya. He is inconceivable. In previous verses, Narada Muni has been addressed by Shukadev Goswami as Bhagavan. Bhagavan means the Supreme Personality of Godhead who possesses all opulences. Narada Muni, because of his complete surrender and dedication, is Shaktivesh. He is fully empowered by the Lord. He's a devotee. And therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhagavan, is manifesting his will and much of his power through Narada Muni. Narada Muni will never declare to be God, and the Vaishnavas do not declare him to be God. He is a devotee. But he is such a devotee, such a specially chosen devotee, that Krishna is manifesting his will and his powers through Narada. So just as Krishna is inconceivable, the mercy of Narada Muni is also inconceivable. In this realm of inconceivability, it is very essential that a devotee has strong faith. Faith that is based on scripture, philosophy, logic. If our faith is not strongly ground on the Word of God, if our intelligence is not convinced, then the Lord's inconceivable nature, or sometimes as it is manifesting through devotees, will very much shake our convictions. Just like, for instance, people criticize Krishna. One time I was giving a class, and it was actually in a prison many years ago in Kentucky, in a Quaker meeting. And one of the participants was a PhD professor. It was all scholars, actually. I don't know why it was held in a prison. It was all scholars. And I was talking about Krishna. And afterward, in the parking lot, he and his wife came up to me. And the professor said, "Of all the gods, why do you worship Krishna?" He said, "I received my PhD at the Hindu Banaras University in Varanasi. And I did my thesis on Gita Govinda by Jayadev Goswami. So I am an authority on Krishna. And I know what Krishna does in the bushes with gopis. Why do you worship Krishna? I mean, of all the aspects of the absolute truth that can achieve the one, why Krishna? He doesn't even follow basic principles of morality. He steals. Steals butter, steals other people's wives. Hare Krishna. So I asked him, "Before your study of Gita Govinda, did you thoroughly study Bhagavad Gita?" It's a science. You got your PhD. You should understand, to get your PhD, first you have to go to kindergarten. Then you have to go to first grade, second grade. You have to graduate grammar school. Then you have to go through all the process of learning in high school. Then you have to go through all the process of learning college and get your bachelor's degree. Then you get your master's degree. Then you could bring in, actually, the study of the PhD level. You don't learn trigonometry when you're in first grade. You learn addition and subtraction. Gita Govinda is for the Paramhamsas. It's for the self-realized souls who have passed through knowledge and realization of all. Bhagavatam begins first canto. Unless you understand progressively the first nine cantos, you will not really comprehend the tenth canto. And you're taking beyond the tenth canto.
The five chapters of Rasa-lila is the highest summit of the whole Bhagavatam. And Gita Govinda is describing the details of the Vasantaras of Govardhan Hill. Very, very high, deep subject matter. I said, have you actually realized that you're not this body? We should understand. When you read Bhagavad Gita, you understand who Krishna is. He's the proprietor of everything that exists. Everything is meant for his enjoyment. He is Purusha. Everyone and everything is Prakriti in that sense. Krishna's not stealing butter. He owns all butter. He's just reclaiming it. That's all. And actually, the gopis are only making their butter with the hope that Krishna will steal it. The gopis complain. I'm actually saying more than I said to the professor, but but in essence, like this. Gopis, they would complain to Yashoda Maya about Krishna's mischievous activities. And Yashoda Maya would say, oh, then I will keep Krishna home. No, 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 please don't do that. Actually, the only reason they kept cows, the only reason they milked the cows, the only reason they churned the butter is with the aspiration and the hope that Krishna will be so pleased by our love that he will come to steal. For the gopis, the butter was the physical expression of their love. And for Krishna to be attracted, it means to be attracted to our hearts. When our heart becomes soft like butter and sweet like butter, then Krishna will steal it. He is Hari. That is the perfection of life. That was all the gopis lived for. And actually, Krishna is the only supreme husband spiritually. We are all meant for his enjoyment. So he was standing next to his wife. I said, actually, your wife belongs to Krishna. He's the supreme proprietor and enjoyer of everything. Everyone is ultimately meant for his enjoyment. So my question is, why are you taking Krishna's property? Krishna's not taking someone else's property. We should respect our wife as the property of God and treat her accordingly with such respect. So I was explaining like this. My dear sir, I think you should go back to the first verse of Bhagavad Gita, Dharma Kshetra Kru Kshetra. Then maybe you'll understand who is Krishna. Then when he's dancing with gopis, you'll understand he's the supreme absolute truth. He's the cause of all causes. Everything's emanating from him. He showed his universal form to Arjuna. What is his supreme being? So at that point, he said, actually, breakfast is waiting. I have to go home. So it's an early morning program. So yes, it is very true that if we want to survive the storms of Maya, we have to have very, very strong faith. Faith in God's words can give us stability in every situation of life. Do you remember, I think it was in 1972, I believe it was in L.A., some devotees were in L.A. and they came back, leaders of our society were sitting with Prabhupada, and Srila Prabhupada said, if you have complete conviction, if you are convinced that Krishna is the supreme personality of Godhead, and your life is perfect. And you could spread this movement all over the world. Then he looked at all of his leaders and he said, are you convinced that Krishna is the supreme personality of God? And when Prabhupada said that, before Prabhupada, nobody could say yes. If we simply have that conviction, our life is perfect. That is faith. In fact, Prabhupada said, if the devotees, the amount of devotees we have now, we're just convinced, we could take over the world, we could make the whole world Krishna conscious in 18 days. Do you remember that statement? Did I say it correctly?
Then he said, why 18 days? 18 hours.
You say that with great conviction, Bhajan Narayan.
Then he said, but what will you do with it? Simply sleep.
So Prabhupada was very much concerned that we read his books, that we study his books carefully. And we come together for Bhagavatam classes, Gita classes, to discuss the content of his books. Why? Not so that we could be intellectual scholars, so that we could survive the various tests of Maya. So that when the inconceivable will of Krishna comes upon us, we will be able to, we may not understand the details of what's happening and why, but we do have faith that ultimately it's perfect. Ultimately, it's the best thing for everyone. That faith is very important. Srila Prabhupada sometimes tested the faith of his disciples. So here Narada Muni, by logical standards, it's really incomprehensible what he's doing. It's actually strange. Here, Vasudev brings his first son, Kirtiman, and says, Kamsa, I promised this child to you. Here he is. And Kamsa becomes very soft-hearted. He's really impressed that Vasudev is such a man of honor, that his firstborn son, how dear is the firstborn son to a father? He's just handing him over to Kamsa, just to keep his promise. What a gentleman. What character. Even Kamsa's heart became soft. He affectionately said to Vasudev, I have no fear or danger from this child. It's only the eighth child that I'm concerned with. So things seem to be going very much in a good direction. And in comes Narada Muni. And he tells Kamsa, we discussed this in class yesterday, some of the dialogue between Narada and Kamsa. He's telling him his past lives, how he was killed by Vishnu. He's telling him the nature of his birth, how he's actually, his father is a Daita, Narugrasena. He's telling him that he went to a conference of the demigods headed by Lord Brahma at Mount Sumeru, and they were all discussing that they were all going to take birth on earth in the Yadu dynasty, many of them, and that Vishnu was going to appear, and their whole purpose was to kill Kamsa and the demon race. And he tells Kamsa, actually, Kamsa, any one of the sons of Devaki could be Vishnu. Be careful. To tell a man like Kamsa that? The man was wild. To give him that type of information, it's inevitable what he's going to do. And then he took Vasudeva and Devaki, who are two pure devotees, and put them in iron shackles and chains, and cast them into a prison, And then every baby that was born immediately was birthed. He murdered it with his own hands. He didn't even trust somebody else to do it. He murdered it with his own hands. The king. He was so angry after hearing Narada Muni, he even imprisoned his own father and took his throne. He was very demoniac. But it is interesting to note that even Kamsa, it was below his integrity to perform an abortion. Even he would have, even he had the, he was civilized enough to at least allow the child to be born. That does tell what the condition of the age of Kali has become. Kamsa would not stoop so low for abortion. But in human society, people are just conditioned to think it's just a normal, civilized activity. Family planning. Today it's a sign of intelligence. Prior to Kali Yuga, even Kamsa wouldn't consider it. So, Narada Muni must be understood in reference to Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. Here we understand that Narada Muni was doing it out of pure love and compassion for all living beings. Just like in another story that will take place later on in Bhagavatam, he sees Nala Kuvera and Manigriva. They're sons of Kuvera. Kuvera is the treasure of the demigods. He's the older brother of Ravana. But Kuvera, such opulence, such intelligence, such good character. Kuvera is really a great personality. And the Lord has given him such incredible responsibilities. Treasure of all the wealth of the Swargaloka, the heavenly abodes. So his sons, he raised them very nicely, but because of all of the opulence, false pride. And when false pride comes, you don't really want to listen to anyone. They were kind of like hippies in one sense. They just wanted to enjoy intoxication because they didn't have to work so hard. Their father did everything for them. They were just getting intoxicated and beautiful heavenly women they were enjoying with. And one day when they were in a lake, Narada Muni came by. And the ladies, they were very much embarrassed. Narada Muni's coming and we're naked in a lake with men. So they got out very quickly and in a very repentant mood, they put on their clothes. But Nala Kuvera and Manigriva didn't do anything. They didn't even acknowledge Narada Muni's existence. That's how proud they were. And Narada Muni contemplated how to save these men. He wasn't contemplating how to punish them. He was contemplating how to save them. And the only way to save these people is punishment. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada explains in this regard, when people become proud due to too much power, fame, Kunti janmaishwarya shruti shubir edamanam adapuman. That the greatest disqualifications for spiritual life is high birth, high education, physical beauty, and great wealth. Akinchana gocharam. The qualification to actually take shelter of the Lord is akinchanam. The conception that really I have nothing. Now we find throughout history Six Goswamis. They were multi-millionaires. They gave everything to just wear some copan some patched quilt, to live under trees, on the hard ground, just begging for some dry bread, maybe some chickpeas. Such a simple life. But they were always immersed in the ecstatic love of the gopis. But then we also find Pundarik Vidyanidhi. He was a very, very wealthy man, living in opulence. And there was King Prataparudra, who was also living in great opulence. And then we have Ambarish Maharaj, Durvas Muni's living under trees. He's an ascetic. And Ambarish, he's living in a magnificent, beautiful palace. He's the king of the world. He has wife, he has children, he has crown, he has throne. And yet Ambarish was a pure, unalloyed devotee, superior to Durvas Muni. Why? Akinchana Gocharam. Because he recognized that nothing is mine. I'm caretaker on behalf of Krishna of this family. I'm caretaker on behalf of Krishna of this wealth. I'm caretaker on behalf of Krishna of my very, very high position and power. Most of the stories of Srimad Bhagavatam, many of them, are stories of the greatest, most powerful, wealthy, opulent kings and how they were perfect devotees of the Lord. Dhruva Maharaj wanted a kingdom greater than his father and grandfather. That means Lord Brahma, Swayambhuva Manu. Huh? He wanted a kingdom greater. But Narada Muni, he intervened in his life and taught him how to become a pure devotee by chanting the names of the Lord constantly and meditating on the Lord and worshiping the deity. So then Dhruva Maharaj, actually in just a matter of a few months, saw Lord Vishnu face to face. And Vishnu said, "Now what is the benediction you want?" Dhruva Maharaj, according to Hari Bhakti Sudodaya, he said, "My Lord, I came looking for broken pieces of glass in the form of material power, prestige, and wealth. But I have attained you, the rarest diamond." He only wanted to be the servant of the servant in love. That was all he wanted. But it's interesting to note that Lord Vishnu gave him that, but then told him, "Go back and be the king." Haribo, I'm still going to give you a kingdom better than your grandfather. I'm going to give you Sutala Loka. Yes? And after you leave this world, you will have Sutala Loka. It's not even subjected to the pralayas of this world. It's a spiritual abode. Yes? And in this world, you will be the king of the world. You go home, your father, you'll see. He will give you the throne. You'll have everything. But you have to get married and you have to have children. Dhruva Maharaj did it all. But he did it in a pure devotional mood. Glorious. He didn't claim, "This is mine. I am this body and this is mine. I am the servant of Krishna and everything is Krishna's. It's under my care to use for his loving service." We find the same with Prahlad Maharaj. He was just a 5-year-old boy. His father was the king of the universe, Hiranyakashipu. Now all he had to do was just not preach and he would have been the heir to everything. That's all. Actually, Prabhupada quotes Sridhar Swami, the original commentator of Bhagavatam. And he explains, just like if your father has wealth and you are the son, all you have to do to get the wealth is just live. Right? You will inherit the wealth. All you have to do is just live. Nothing else. So in the same way, every devotee is accepting Krishna and Radharani as mother and father. Our inheritance is all the facilities of the spiritual world. All we have to do to get that inheritance is just go on practicing Krishna consciousness. Just go on living as devotees. And it's automatic. Krishna will give us his world in the spiritual world to be with him. It is the rightful inheritance of a devotee if we just live according to his principles. So Prahlad Maharaj, he was the eldest son. Yes, Dravida? He's the eldest son. And he was the best of the sons. But Hiranyakashipu, he wanted to give him everything. He loved his son. All he had to do was not preach to his father. All he had to do was not preach to his father. But still he preached. So he was trying. Murder attempts were being made again and again and again by Hiranyakashipu and his people. And ultimately Nrsingadev came and liberated Hiranyakashipu. And then what did Lord Narasimhadev do? He had Brahma coronate Prahlad as the king. He accepted a wife. His eldest son was Virochan. His grandson was Bali Maharaj. His family man. But the same spirit was there. That nothing is mine. Everything is the property of God. If we have that consciousness, then even though we're living in this world with so many responsibilities, we never become entangled by karma. As soon as we think, I and mine, and act independent of the will of God, then immediately so much karma comes upon us. So real freedom, real happiness, real peace, real prosperity is this consciousness. And then there is a story of Yudhisthira. He was a pure devotee, living in the forest for 12 years. But Krishna made him king. Krishna gave him the king of the kingdom of the entire world. Do you know what the palace of Hastinapur must have looked like? Nothing could compare with it in this world today. The headquarters of the king of the Yadu, of the Kuru dynasty. Incredible. And after he was coronated as king, Kunti Devi approached Krishna. She said, I'm very much disturbed now. Vipadashantu tatachvat. She said that let the calamities come. When the calamities were coming, when we were just with nothing in the forest, threats to our life, we were always remembering you. And in remembering you, we are free of birth and death. But now we have all this. Now what? We can become complacent. That was her concern, forgetting Krishna. But Krishna kept Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira ran the kingdom, ran his family, ran the whole state in a spirit of servitude, not in the spirit of enjoyment. That is really the basic principle between a true devotee and one who is under the spell of Maya. Is whatever our occupational duty, if we perform that duty in a spirit of servitude rather than spirit of enjoyer. That was Yudhisthira. That was Ambarish. Ninth canto of Bhagavatam tells the story of Ranti Dev. Would you like to hear? Ranti Dev was king. And in those days, kings were not like the presidents and prime ministers of today, where at any, you know, you could just be voted out. Or governor in California, You don't even get your whole term. You just get kicked out, voted out. Even President Nixon, Prabhupada, actually Nixon must get some special benediction because Prabhupada said his name so many times. Do you remember? Prabhupada often used him as an example of someone with such power and such position and such greatness being kicked out because of some misbehavior. Yeah, Kennedy too. But Kennedy, he just used it as an example. Nixon, he kind of chastised. But just the fact that Prabhupada was thinking of Richard Milhouse Nixon, what a benediction. What a benediction he got. You know, he must definitely be elevated somehow or other. So yes, the presidents, the prime ministers, even in India, prime minister sometimes in the middle of their term, the parliament becomes fractioned and then the whole party, and then they have to have re-elections. Hare Krishna. So there's not much stability. And in America, you know, now the president is campaigning like anything, spending gigantic sums of money to campaign to somehow or other maintain that office. But even if he wins, maximum 4 more years, then he has to move aside. But when we're talking about kings, it's for life. It's for life. There's no question. It's secure. It is your position. So Rantidev was such a king. But he was such a servant of society, like Yudhisthira. There's so many examples of great, powerful, wealthy kings. Maharaj Shibi. He was willing to give his life to serve a pigeon. Yes? The hawk wanted to eat the pigeon. The pigeon came to the king. King is supposed to give shelter to everyone. I am your subject. The king. Shibi said to the hawk, you will not touch this pigeon. Well, what about me? You have to give shelter to me. My food is pigeons. I need to eat. So he could have said, all right, you know, that's all right, eat the pigeon. After all, who in history, who's going to really notice that a pigeon was killed? But he was such a man of integrity. He said, no. Whatever the weight of that pigeon is, you can eat my flesh. Why would the king do that? Could have said anybody else's flesh. It's the king. He said, no, my flesh. That was his service attitude. And he just kept cutting off more flesh. But the pigeon always weighed more. So finally he sat on the scale and it weighed exactly the same. So he said, eat me. He was willing to give his life. That's integrity, willing to give life to maintain the principle of service toward others above one's own personal interest. It's an incredible example. And Rantidev performed a very, very difficult fast. Why? Not only for his own purification, but for the welfare of the whole world. He did a fast for the welfare of the whole world to get God's mercy. And his whole family voluntarily fasted with him because they had such feeling of support and love for him and respect. So at the end of this fast, Ranti was on the verge of death. And there was a nice feast prepared for him. It was in a secluded place. The nice feast was brought to him in this secluded place where he was doing his fasting. And then some Brahmin came and said, I'm hungry. So he just fed him to his full satisfaction. Then he sat down to eat again with his family. And then who came next? Asudra, yes? Sudra came and said, I'm hungry. So Ranti Dev, he fed his whole family. Because after all, he had to protect. He fed his whole family. Then he fed the Sudra. Then he was about to eat. And then some man came with dogs and said, my dogs are hungry. There was only a little food left. He gave all the rest of the food that he had to this dog keeper and his dogs. Now he was literally trembling on the verge of death, seconds away from death. The only thing that was there to just to give him survival was a little water. He was about to drink the water, and a chandala came. Chandala means the most sinful type of outcast. This chandala came and cried out, O king, I'm thirsty. Please give me water. There was only enough for one person. It was a matter of life and death at this point. If he gives the water, he dies. If he drinks the water, he could survive, at least long enough to get some food. So what did Ranti Dev do? He became ecstatic. He became ecstatic. He folded his palms and started offering prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, my dear Lord, what a great benediction this is. I pray for only one thing. In every birth I take, let me give my life up for the welfare of others. Let me give up my life to serve others in every birth to please you. In giving this chandala, my water, which really means in giving him my life, he said, I will become forever free from hunger, thirst, anxiety, moroseness, and illusion. And with these prayers, with folded palms, he gave the chandala the water. That's service. Here is a man who is king. He has so much, but he's willing to give his life even for such an insignificant person. This is greatness. Sibi, give his life for a pigeon. It sounds extreme, but this is achintya. This is inconceivable. We cannot imitate these souls. If you try to imitate these souls, you'll go mad. But we have to understand the principle that they represent and strive to follow in their footsteps. Then all of a sudden, the Brahman, the Shudra, the dog keeper, the dogs, the chandala, they all appeared. And they manifested forms of demigods. And they smiled. And they said to Ranti Dev, we just wanted to show the world what kind of a king you really are, what kind of a Vaishnav you are. Then they gave him nice prasad. Haribol. It explains in Srimad Bhagavatam that the entire world was Krishna conscious. Why? Because they had a king like Ranti Dev. Ranti Dev treated every single citizen, man, woman, child of all castes, as his own beloved child. He did not discriminate. He treated every living being, even the trees and the animals and the insects and the lizards. He treated everyone as his own children, praja. Maharaj Yudhisthira also had this sense. Every living being on the planet was praja, his children. And he loved them like a father. When there's kings like that, do you know people are eager to pay taxes? Can you imagine a world like that? Where people are eager to pay taxes. They'll even give more than they're expected. Why? Because they see that every paisa, every penny that's being given is being utilized for everyone's welfare so directly and so gloriously with such intelligence. They feel protected. The duty of leaders is to protect. The duty of a father and a mother, the duty of a temple president, a guru, the duty of a politician is to protect. Protect your subjects as your own beloved children. So because Ranti Dev was willing to give his life in service to God and in service to others, people loved him so much. How much they loved him that they'd do anything for him. That is the nature of love. Sometimes people complain, nobody loves me, nobody loves me. But really our concern should be, who do we love? You give love, and naturally people may reciprocate with love. A devotee is always wanting to give, unconditionally give. And that consciousness naturally attracts people to reciprocate. That was Srila Prabhupada. We have been discussing this the last few days. He was unconditionally giving. He wasn't getting anything in return except, by material standards, headaches. Right? He didn't. Prabhupada told one devotee, he was in very nice quarters at New Dwarka. They made these nice quarters for Prabhupada when they were brand new. Prabhupada said, you see this opulent quarters? He said, I'm simply longing to be back in my little simple rooms in Radha Damodar Temple in Vrindavan. He said, but for me to go back there would be sense gratification. He said, my service to my guru is to live here in this situation. Prabhupada was unconditional, and because his love was so much in a mood of serving others, that even strangers, even people he never met, even people who just heard about him, were willing to give their life, their soul, their everything to him with love. There's so many examples. Prabhupada would come to an airport, and there'd be 100 devotees, maybe 200 devotees, and of them, only 5 people ever physically met Prabhupada before. But everyone's weeping, bowing down and weeping with love. Just because, just through his example, their hearts were so touched. They felt, he's my father, he's my guru, he's my well-wisher, he's my friend. We felt his love. Within our hearts, willing to surrender everything in love without ever even meeting or speaking to him. That is the power of devotional service. Bhadri Narayan Prabhu mentioned John Fitzgerald Kennedy. He actually said a statement. Yes? Oh, okay. Whatever you say is all right. Yes, Dravida Prabhu said it. They are so much, they're like one soul and two bodies, these pure persons. They have such harmony and unity together. But he said, ask not what the country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. Now that's unconditional, unmotivated nationalism. Yes? Dovetail that same propensity toward Krishna. And that's pure devotional service. Prahlad Maharaj was offered benedictions by Narasingadev. Prahlad said, if I ask you for anything, then I'm not your devotee. I'm not your devotee. I'm just a businessman. I'm trading with you. I'm giving, you giving. I don't want anything. I only want to remember you always. Narasingadev insisted, it will please me if you ask for something. Ask for something. All right. Give liberation to my father. Do you know the story of Quraysh? Should I tell? Would you like to hear? It's an intense story. Quraysh was a disciple of Sripad Ramanujacharya. He was a grihastha. He had wife and children. He was such a devotee. There was a king in Kanchipuram. His name was Kolahala. And this king was a fanatic. I mean, he was a fanatic. He was a devotee of Shiva. But he was not very philosophically understanding. He was thinking that everyone must convert to be a devotee of Shiva. And he hated Vaishnavas because they were not like him. His false ego. So he wanted to convert the whole country to Shivites. Now, there was a disciple of Ramanujacharya who Ramanujacharya just spoon-fed with love and affection, taught him the philosophy, taught him the culture of bhakti, just gave him his heart. But that disciple turned corrupt and turned against Ramanujacharya and actually became, he became so learned under Ramanujacharya's tutelage that when he went to Kolahala and became one of his pundits. And this ex-disciple said, the biggest impediment to spreading the word of Shiva is Ramanujacharya. Because he's so influential. If you convert him, then you'll convert everybody. If you don't convert him, you're not going to get very far. So you should call him here for a debate. And either you should defeat him and get him to sign his defeat, or you have to kill him. Ramanuja's disciples telling him this. Sometimes that happens. So he sent soldiers to the ashram where Ramanujacharya was. When they came to town with their swords, and their clubs, their weapons, with an official declaration that we're apprehending Ramanujacharya to bring him for a debate. And everybody knew it was either surrender or die. So Quraysh heard about this. Quraysh told Ramanujacharya. He fell at his feet, weeping. He said, please give me one benediction in life. Please give me this benediction. Give me your sannyas clothes. You take my white grihastha clothes. You escape and let me go to see the king. Ramanujacharya, absolutely not. I cannot do that to you. But Quraysh was so sincere. It was really his only desire. He said, if I die, it's no loss to the world. But you're our guru. If you die, it will be such a tragic loss for all humanity. Please let me do this service. Ramanujacharya was actually conquered by Quraysh's love. And he gave him his sannyas clothes. And Ramanujacharya put on the clothes of a grihastha. And Ramanujacharya went out. He went out the back way, and the soldiers just saw some grihastha walking, so they didn't care anything. Now Ramanujacharya's, one of his gurus, whose name was Mahapurna, he was one of the gurus of Ramanujacharya, very elderly man. He told Quraysh, I will not let you go alone. I will go with you. Quraysh said, you're old. You're my param guru. I can't let you come. He said, I'm coming. So the guards came, "Where is Ramanujacharya?" And Koresh came with sannyas robes. "I am Ramanuja. You come with us." So they took them to the king. And there they saw their ex-god brother, just really a vengeful person, miserably cruel, vengeful person, envious as anything. So there was a debate, and all the pundits of the king came, and Koresh and Mahapurna were such scholars of the Shastras, they totally humiliated the pundits with such sound, complete defeat. Very, very difficult. The king was outraged. The king started arguing with them. Total defeat. They were establishing Krishna as the supreme personality of Godhead, Vishnu. So when they absolutely could not disturb their arguments, finally the king said, "Either sign this document or die." So then Koresh signed the document. And they were so happy. But then they read the document. And basically he wrote it in a very special way, on the basis of weights. But really what he said is Vishnu is the supreme personality of God and Shiva is eternally his servant. That infuriated them. Now the problem is that this king, Kolatunga, was that his name? Kolahala. This king, he, many, many years before, Ramanuja saved his sister's life. So it wouldn't be right for him to just kill him outright. So they decided to torture them and then cast them in the jungle to die a slow, miserable death. So he had his guards take knives and brutally gouge out their eyes. First they went to Kolahala and gouged out his eyes with knives. Brutally, not surgically. Then they went to Mahapurna and gouged out his eyes with knives. There was just blood flying everywhere. So much pain. And Koresh with folded palms, was just thanking Lord Vishnu. He was so happy. His body was in total pain, but his heart was so happy that I don't deserve this. I don't deserve such a benediction of being allowed to do this type of service for my Guru Maharaj. Vishnu, you're so kind, you're so merciful. You're allowing me to do such an incredible service to my Guru Maharaj. He was simply thanking the Lord. Tatenu kampam susamikshe mano bunjana evatma kritam vibhaga. Prabhupada quoted this verse often. That the person who inherits liberation, the highest liberation, is the person who, even when miserable situations come, that devotee, with folded palms and a grateful heart, thanks Krishna. So when miserable situations come, it's actually the opportunity to qualify yourself. So that was Koresh's mood. And then they dragged these two great souls into the jungle and just left them there to die. They couldn't even walk. They were just laying there in total pain, bleeding profusely. Then the guards left. Some of Ramanujacharya's disciples, their godbrothers, were secretly following from a distance the whole time. And they picked them up. Meanwhile, if anybody found out that Ramanuja was actually alive, they would have killed him. So his disciples took him to a hill station called Malkute, very holy place even today, where he spent years and years and years in seclusion, in exile. Ramanuja was in exile for years. After some, the disciples wanted to bring Kuresh and Mahapurna back to the ashram. But Mahapurna, he said, I'm just too old and this pain is just too much of a trauma for me. I cannot survive. Just chant the names of Vishnu and let me leave my body. And in the arms of the devotees, Mahapurna just gratefully, he was grateful also. Such a wonderful death for my disciple. I've given up this. He was so grateful. He's being allowed to die to serve his disciple. Hare Krishna. And he left his body. And Kuresh was so grateful that he was willing to endure such pain to serve his guru. What a culture Vaishnavism is. It's quite inconceivable. Should I continue? Years went by. And ultimately the king, because of his offenses, died a miserable death. So then Ramanujacharya, people came and said, now you're free, you could come out. Because his son was actually a nice person. So Ramanuja came down. And one day they brought Kuresh before Ramanuja. And there he was, with just mangled face, with no eyes. Ramanuja cried upon seeing his disciple in that state. He instructed Kuresh, go before the deity and pray. Pray that the deity will give you your eyes and your sight back. And he will. So Kuresh went before the deity and just began to perform his bhajan. And the deity actually spoke to Kuresh because he was so dear to Ramanuja. He gave so much of his life to Ramanuja. The deity loved him. So Lord Vishnu spoke. He said, Kuresh, I know you've come to ask a benediction. Please ask. I promise I will fulfill whatever you ask for. Kuresha, with folded hands, replied, that godbrother of mine, who became envious and turned against my guru, and was really the cause of gouging out my eyes and all of this, he's made so many aparads. My prayer is, please forgive him and give him residence in Vaikuntha. Vishnu said, is that all? He said, that's all. Kuresh came out of the temple. Ramanuja came before him. He said, but your eyes are still like that. Did you ask the deities for eyes? What did you ask for? Tell me, what did you ask for? No, you can't lie before your spiritual master. If you lie before your spiritual master, Krishna within the heart is not going to be happy. So he had to tell him. He said, actually, Guru Maharaj, I'm not in such a bad condition. But that disciple who had created such an offense to you, he's in such a miserable condition. I pray that he could be forgiven and elevated to Vaikuntha. Ramanuja said, go back tomorrow. Go back to the temple and ask the deity, pray to the deity to give you your eyes back. So he went back the next day on the order of his guru. And he did his bhajan, was praying, and Lord Vishnu spoke. Quraysh, please ask any benediction I will bestow. What would you like? Quraysh said that King Kolahala, he was so offensive to my guru, so offensive to the Vaishnavas, very bad man. Please forgive him and give him elevation to Vaikuntha. He's the one that gouged out our eyes. Is there anything else you want? He said, no, nothing else. So Quraysh came out of the temple. Ramanuja met him the next day. He saw, he still had no eyes. Ramanuja tried to ask, what did you ask for? He told him honestly what he asked for. Then Sripad Ramanujacharya understood Quraysh's heart very, very clearly. It's simply impossible for him. He doesn't have it within his heart, even if his guru tells him to. It's just not within his nature to ask anything for himself. He can't do it. He had no capacity to ask anything for himself. He was just in such a mood of service. His whole life was just to serve others, even his enemies, even people who blasphemed and tried to kill him. He just wanted to serve them and give them his life. What kind of a Vaishnava was Quraysh? So Ramanujacharya, he told him, you go back to the temple and you offer this prayer. You ask for this benediction. You say that my Guru Maharaj, I lost his possessions, which are so dear to him. He entrusted them under my care, and they're very dear to him. Please return them for his service. So Quraysh went to the temple, did his prayer. Vishnu said, what would you like, Quraysh? Ask any benediction. Quraysh said, I don't want anything for myself. But I lost two things that are the property of my guru, and he wants them back. So then a breeze came from the altar, and Quraysh fell unconscious upon being hit by the breeze. And when he woke up, he had perfect eyes, completely healed. And then when he returned out of the temple, Ramanujacharya was very happy, very happy. Yes, Quraysh had wife. Quraysh had children. Quraysh had a house and property. But what a standard of servitude. What a standard of dedication. So yes, real happiness comes through service. When we express our love through service, then we can recognize Krishna's love. Krishna's love is always upon everyone. But by the power of Maya, we just can't recognize it. But according to how we surrender, and what does surrender mean? To serve in a spirit of devotion, to please the Lord, to please Guru, to please the Vaishnavas, to show compassion to others. This is how we serve the Lord. To do the will of the Lord. Through service, Krishna gives us the ability to recognize his infinite love upon us. That was Srila Prabhupada. Complete, unconditional life of service to every living being. One time, a newspaper reporter asked Prabhupada, how many disciples do you have? And Prabhupada said, everyone is my disciple. Some know it and some do not. Now, he wasn't saying that in an egoistic way. Really, what he was saying is, I've just come to serve everyone, to give everyone entrance into Krishna's abode. Such incredible humility. So this is the spirit of Narada Muni. He knows the Satgarbhas, the six sons of Devaki. He knows their past. He knows that they're the sons of Maricha, and they were cursed due to an offense to Brahma. And they don't want to be born. They were born of grandsons of Hiranyakashipu and sons of Kalanemi. They want to go back. They want to become pure devotees ultimately. He knew that by them being killed by Kamsa, ultimately, they would become pure devotees. And the example of Vasudeva and Devaki is really mysterious. Why in the world did they keep having children? They're in a prison. It's not that they couldn't control their senses. they were paramhamsas, acharya. They were so great. They were willing to have children, simply, and even lose their children. Such a tragic thing for a mother and father, right before their eyes, to see their babies slaughtered. They were willing to go through that just to facilitate Krishna's descent into the world. And as we explained yesterday, all the children, they attain the highest perfection. And Krishna came soon. Because Krishna comes when there's a great need. Kamsa was so sinful, such a rascal, Krishna had to come to kill him. So this was Narada Muni's transcendental strategy of compassion. Nalakubera Mani Griva. They were proud. They were sinful. Narada Muni cursed them to be trees. And they had to suffer a little in that tree body. But in that suffering, they became sober. And after some time, Nanda Maharaj was living near those ancient Arjun trees. And after some time, little Gopal was born and was crawling around, and they were watching the Leelas. They became attracted. They became purified. But if it was Mani Griva and Nala Kuvera, they would have probably just walked right by Gopal because they were so proud. But as trees, they became really sober. There's nothing to be proud of as a tree, especially if you still have the consciousness of a demigod and you have the body of a tree. It's very humiliating. In other words, Narada Muni crushed their pride into fine powder. And then when Krishna came, they could recognize, they could appreciate, they could surrender. And ultimately they became perfect. So that is the power of the inconceivable mercy of Krishna and the inconceivable mercy of his divine representatives like Narada Muni. Narada Muni Bhajaivi Naradika Ramana Name. He's simply everywhere going around doing good for everyone. But sometimes in such mysterious ways he does good for everyone. But he really knows what we need. Srila Prabhupada would often say, we are in the disciplic succession of Narada Muni. Narada Muni would sometimes even be cursed. Yes, Daksha cursed him. And he just accepted it as a blessing. And Prabhupada said, similarly, I'm being cursed by some of the parents of my disciples. But I accept it as a blessing. So this is the wonderful Leela of the Lord. And through it all, Prabhupada actually culminates the purport. Janma karma cha me divyam evam yoveti tatvata tyaktva deham punarjanma naiti mameti swarjana. That when we hear the transcendental subject matter of the scriptures, from devotees in parampara, then we can actually understand as it is. When we understand the transcendental nature of Krishna's appearance and activities in this world, we never, ever, ever have to take birth in this world again. Narada Muni, this compassionate Vaishnava, is making all these arrangements just so that Krishna could come to this world to perform his lila of appearance and activities, to give every living being the chance to just understand that and never take birth in this material world again. Is there any questions? Yes, Prabhu.
Narada Muni always chanted the name of Lord Narayan. After Sri Krishna Avatar, did he change his chanting to Lord Krishna's name? I always wondered.
Narada Muni always chants Radhika Damana and the Maha Mantra and Narayan, depending on the time, place, and circumstance. It's not that he... In the Hindu movies... The Hindi movies, he always chants Narayan. But that's Bollywood. They don't always get everything exactly right. But actually, Narada Muni Bhajaivina Radhika Ramana Name. He's eternally chanting the names of Radha Raman, Krishna, the enjoyer of Radha. He's eternally chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And he's also eternally chanting the name of Narayan, depending on the devotee that he's... To the devotees of Narayan, he's chanting the names of Narayan. To the devotees of Krishna, he's chanting the names of Krishna. Personally, he's chanting the names of Krishna. To Valmiki Muni, he gave him the name of Rama. Yes, but he couldn't say Rama because he was too sinful. So he gave him the name Mara, which means death. That was very much acceptable by Valmiki Muni. Ma Rama 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 Rama, I became Rama. So at the time, even this was even before Rama appeared. He gave him the name Rama. He was chanting Rama. So Narada Muni is not sectarian. He's a very universal preacher. According to time, place, and circumstance, he is chanting the glories of the Supreme Personality of God. Yes, Dravida Prabhu. Does that answer your question? Yes. Plot.
Yes. Plot.
Please. Yes.
Then they went to the king, and they arrested him. Now, of course, the sheriff or whoever arrested them didn't know who they were, so they were fooled. The king was fooled. But that disciple, that happened to him. And he said, wait a minute, that's not wrong. That's correct.
Maybe he wasn't there, actually. Yeah, maybe he was just behind. He didn't want to face his guru directly. That might be it. Yeah, obviously he must have been behind the scenes, but he didn't really want to show his face. That's all?
No.
Dravida Prabhu, no one will believe that that's all coming from you. Please illuminate our hearts.
The only thing I can come up with is that, just to add to the whole thing.
Please.
It reminded me of this story of Andy Dave and this idea of giving in general. When Krishna's in the forest, he's wandering. I think it's after the stealing of the gopis' clothes. There's a little section there in that chapter where Krishna is going in the forest with his friends. He sees the trees, and he starts praising the trees. These trees, they give everything, they never complain. They're giving the fruit, they're giving the flower, they're giving the shade, they're giving the bark, they're giving their own wood, they're giving. And then he has
you very much. Thank you. San Diego is so fortunate to have such a great Vaishnav scholar as Dravida Prabhu living. But when figs dry up, they become more sweet. Krishna likes them even more. Yes. Can you speak louder, please?
How does one develop faith?
The beginning is in asking such a nice question as you have asked. We develop faith through a natural process. And that natural process is associating with people who have faith and hearing from them and learning from them. Prabhupada explains so nicely, so simply, that hearing in the association of faithful devotees awakens faith within our heart. Actually, the soul, faith is already there. Complete faith in the Supreme Absolute Lord of the Lord, of Lords. That is within our heart. By associating with people who have that faith and hearing from them, hearing the word of God from people with faith, that awakens faith within our heart. Does that answer your question? And ultimately, that's preliminary. It's the preliminary principle. Just like devotees met Prabhupada and they had faith that Krishna was the Supreme Personality of God, they never heard of Krishna the day before. Yes, but because Prabhupada had such faith, such love, just in his association, that faith awakened in their hearts. That's real faith. But then for our faith to become nishta, nishta means firm faith, that comes through purification. Adosha tatata sadhu sangota bhajanakriya tato nartana vittisha tato nishta. There's a whole process of developing strong faith. Initial faith comes by association. Strong faith comes through the process of purification. At the beginning, adosha tatata, there's a little bit of faith. Just some little faith, faint faith that may be in our heart. Krishna reciprocates with our faith and brings us to the association of devotees. In that association, hearing, chanting, serving, our faith gradually develops. And then we commit ourselves to a lifestyle of Krishna consciousness, which means bhajana kriya, where we're chanting our rounds every day, we're reading the scriptures every day, we're performing service every day, we're coming to the temple doing seva. This is bhajana kriya. Through that process, anartha nivritti, the unwanted doubts and attachments of the heart are cleansed. And then at that point, actually nishta, we develop firm faith, unshakable faith. And then we continue serving with that faith and ruchi. We actually develop the higher taste where we spontaneously just are attracted to serving Krishna. And the state of ruchi, our sadhana, is no longer an austerity. It's what we love to do spontaneously. And from ruchi comes atashakti, very, very deep attachment. Attachment to Krishna, attachment to Guru, attachment to Krishna's devotees, attachment to the deities, attachment to prasad, attachment to any devotional service that pleases Krishna. And from that, we continue practicing the principles of Guru's orders, and that develops into bhav. Bhava means preliminary state of love of God. And that develops into prema, the ultimate perfection of the heart, the awakening of the heart's eternal love for Krishna. But through all these stages, the association of devotees are essential. Yes? So there's initial faith, association is important. And then there's the whole process of purification by which the faith of the heart awakens. But through it all, association is essential. Association of people with faith. There's no gift greater than that. Jesus said, if you have faith the size of a mustard seed, you can tell the mountain to move into the ocean and it will move. Prabhupada demonstrated that. Moving a mountain into the ocean is not as easy as moving a hippie into a happy. But Prabhupada had such faith in the holy name and in the order of his guru that he made tens and thousands of hippies into happies. Great miracle. Yes, Dravida Prabhu.
Faith is a universal principle. In the 17th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna asks, okay, you've spoken about demons who don't have faith in Krishna. What about the other modes? So then Krishna describes faith in different modes. So the principle is universal. That whoever you hang out with, or even associate with, who has faith in something, you pick up on that faith. But the question is not how to develop faith. The question is how to develop faith in Krishna and the process of devotional service. The answer is the same, it's association. It confirms what you hear, what you don't understand, and you practice and you realize it.
The great Vedic pundit, Dravida Prabhu, has spoken. It's all dependent on who you hang out with. Quote unquote. Is that from one of the prayers? Yes. This is your compassionate nature. You are speaking our language. Thank you very much. Yes, one more question, Mataji.
Could we ask Krishna not coming back to material world, or coming back to material world to take his service? Which one is the best? Not coming back to material world, or coming back to take a janmas and asking his service? Which one is the best?
It is best to simply surrender to Krishna's will. If you like me to come back, I'm willing to come back millions of times to serve you. If you like me to go back to the spiritual world, I am your property. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.